listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 197 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week we are joined by indie games enthusiast Jupiter Hadley. Hello.
Hello.
Hey. Obviously, if you want, for some reason, notes for this episode, you can find them at nerdassemble.co.uk. And if you want to tweet at us because you're annoyed and pissed off with what we've been talking about, or if you've actually enjoyed it, you can do so at nerdspodcast. There's also an email address.
If they're annoyed, it's probably me.
Okay. You can email us at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk. But, okay, so because Jupiter kindly agreed to be on this episode, we are, for this episode, talking about indie games, which is something we haven't really talked about in a while, other than when we've occasionally mentioned them in stuff that people have been sort of up to, playing-wise. But it has been a while since we've, seriously discussed indie. I have a feeling it might... The last time we've done it was probably, when we had somebody like Ryan Carson on the podcast, which was a while ago. Ryan's lovely. Still lovely. So we were going to have a look at the state of indie games in this year of 2017, because it's been so long, and some of us don't game as much as we used to, either through apathy or too much Supernatural. I suppose the last, since I used to do anything resembling games journalism, a lot's happened with games. And I think perhaps one of the biggest things that's happened is kind of just the acceptance of them on console platforms. The major courting.
It does feel like
that happened.
It does feel like indie games obviously started out on PC because it was easier to develop for, and has since kind of found a small home with consoles,
but also mobile. Mm-hmm. Don't forget mobile.
Yeah, very true.
Very much with mobile.
Yeah, so indie games were a lot easier to distribute online because making physical copies from consoles was just way more to do and way more complicated. But now that we have a load of consoles that have online marketplace, it's very easy to distribute indie games via consoles, which is really quite nice for people who like gaming on consoles as opposed to computers. The PlayStation Switch, the Nintendo Switch, recently...
That's supposed to be secret, that's...
With the Nintendo Switch, some of the titles that were released with it were indie titles, which was really quite cool to see.
Yeah, they made it quite a big deal, didn't they?
Yeah. They really did, Snipper... What is it called? Snipper Clips or whatever? Yeah, that was... one of the main games released with it, and it was just by the way, it's an indie game, and we've got tons of them, and they're still announcing really small indie games, which is quite surprising because they have a lot of bigger indie games like Minecraft and Stardew Valley and Binding of Isaac, but there's also small indie games that are the first game from a studio that are just going to be out on Switch. That's been really cool to see pop up here and there.
I am all for any of these big companies. I mean, it will have started off as to my mind, one of the first places you really saw indie games popping up was Xbox Live Arcade.
Mm. Yes.
Where suddenly something didn't have to be a big boxed product. It could be a throwaway, almost 5-10 minute thing for a few quid. And you got all this imagination popping up. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that seemed to cause a little bit of a ruckus with some people that, they were expecting, everything has to be AAA, everything has to be big explosions, or, fast cars.
Everything has to be the same.
Yeah.
It does feel like there is a slight kickback against indies sometimes when it comes to certain gamers in a general broad sense. Mm. But it's usually the ones
you mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's usually the ones that you know, have always been and are always for AAA titles, you know, the standard £40 per game, that'll last for 40 plus hours minimum, and, you know, usual generic AAA stuff, really. Yeah.
So some people, I feel like, don't have the right mindset when it comes to indie games. They feel that an indie game or an independently made game just means like lower quality. But nowadays, because so many engines are accessible and so many talented people are even just leaving AAA studios and making their own indie games, which whether or not it's indie can be debated later, but there's really amazing games being produced that are really high quality and worth money. So that idea of indie games being awful really is quite expired at this point. Well, you still get some like rough games, but there's quite a lot of good coming out of the industry.
It's good to have some quality control because there's always going to be things that are just chucked together and, you know, just sort of slop out onto whatever marketplace. Steam Greenlight.
Yeah.
Being a prime example of you wouldn't, would you?
It's weird with Steam Greenlight, though, because I haven't heard anything nice about it in a while. Like, it seems like a pretty good idea when it started, and now it's just, you know,
sort of
heavy and sort of self-imploding with just all these games that have kind of been rushed up there before. I mean, I get you might have some people that have like a plan for the game where they're like, oh yeah, let's do an alpha release and then work on everything as people get back to us as feedback and then, you know, kind of go through process that, but then you get stuff.
Yeah, but that's more of a sort of an early access thing, but that can still hold.
Yeah, but the state of some stuff that's being released up on there is just like
really awful.
Yeah, like there's poor quality in the sense that it doesn't work, and it just doesn't have the high level aesthetics of a AAA game because, you know, they haven't chased after like realistic graphics, which is fine because the game doesn't need realistic.
It's a little bit of an education because indie games are fantastic and I do heart them, but sometimes, you know, when you see the credits on a big game come up and they say, you know, producers.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, what do they do? And you play some of the indie games and you think, oh, that's what producers do. They stop this.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, they stand over the, you know, whoever's fiddling around with it and saying, no.
Stop.
No. Yes, stop. That's not going to turn out well.
Try again.
Interesting how, like, a lot of games, when you kind of get to the end, but AAA games, when you get to the end and they'll have, like, the credits and whatnot, and that feels like it's borrowed from film quite a lot. And it's... Are the roles similar in that respect to filmic roles? You know, like, is the director quite like the director of a film?
I think it would depend on the team. A lot of indies end up doing solo stuff, which is insane. Like, Stardew Valley was made by one guy.
Yeah,
just by himself, all of it, all the way through. I've done a lot of game jams and game jam coverage, and recently I've gotten into the world of coming to physical game jams because I live in London now. And I've found that game jam games that are made by a team where they have those traditional roles end up being quite a lot more polished at the end of the time than other games that are made in jams. So I would assume that holds true when it comes to bigger games. Having those defined roles helps just production be smoother, the same way it would with a film. That's how a lot of AAA studios work as well. So it seems to be good to have defined people.
When you're talking about an absolutely massive team, you know, like the AAA studios, you need a hierarchy.
Mm.
You need a structure. You need to be able to, we're doing this by quarter three. And then there are other people doing this. But when you're talking about an indie game, if it's one person who's doing it, that can turn out really well.
Mm.
So long as they are disciplined with it.
Yes, and don't overscope.
I am going to simulate the universe. Well, let's see. Let's see how that goes. I mean, although saying things like that, there are some excellent engines which do simulate a universe.
Mm.
There's not much in the way of game there, but, you know, they've set out to do, you know, randomly generated planets. I'm not talking No Man's Sky, but I can't remember the name of the engine, but there's one which creates a fictional, you know, galaxy, and you can travel anywhere in it, and you can fly around on the planets, and it's really quite nice. And it's just, I wish there was a game in this, but even so, I'm flying on, you know, a completely new planet down at, you know, all these valleys over, you know, oceans, and there's vegetation, and it's awesome, and it is what it is. You know, it's not a game, but it's still amazing that someone on either on a small team, it might even be an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to look that up, what it is.
And that's another thing about indie games. They're not all...
I dreamt it.
Oh, sorry?
I'm pretty sure I've not dreamt that.
Pretty sure it's real. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. There's probably, even if it's not the game you're thinking of, there's probably a game that's very similar. But that's the thing with indie games, because not all of the indie games that are made are games necessarily, or games in a traditional sense. A lot of them won't even have objectives. They're just small experiences, or like even emotional games that are just a look into someone's life. And I find those really interesting, because some developers are literally just making like a piece of them as a human and just giving it to the world and through this medium. And it's just a really weird and interesting way to get a look at someone's life.
Yeah, there's something I have seen. There's been some incredibly personal narratives, like just being kind of put out there, and it's nice in a way, but also kind of like daunting.
Yeah,
it is. Sometimes I feel like I shouldn't be playing it. Like, this isn't where I belong.
Yes, some of those are just fantastic because it's you're using a new technology, but to do what you would otherwise have done in, say, a small novella or, you know, a short story, but you're using the mechanics of a game engine to perform that narrative, and that's brilliant. By the way, I found the name of that space engine. Rather annoyingly, it's called Space Engine.
Perfect. You knew the name all along.
It's a space engine, but what's its name? Space Engine. But
awesome.
It looks absolutely spectacular.
It
so
does
I recommend,
what it says on the tin.
It is. It's the Ron Seal of indie stuff.
But I wonder if perhaps we should be making a distinction between sort of like people who like do like games development as kind of like a hobby. You know, it's not something they're actually expecting to make money from. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a bit like sort of like people who might like paint or, you know, craft as a hobby and stuff, or do photography as a hobby. Versus obviously people who do kind of like come together with like a business plan, and they do have a little team, or it is just them, but they've got a plan and they're going to stick to it, you know, and they're going to develop something that they actually do plan to sell.
Well, I mean, it's the equivalent of, like, once again, the film industry, where you have, you know, personal projects that, you know, are just there for the director to kind of paint their life or paint whatever they want onto the screen. And then there's others that, you know, are designed to make money. And as much money as possible, and yeah, completely agree in that respect.
But I wondered, like, how many of the successful indie games that are out there are obviously sort of like these hobbyist projects that sort of started out as hobbyist projects originally, versus ones that obviously, you know, were born out of essentially like traditional kind of like business planning and stuff.
Well, I mean, is it necessarily a binary in that respect?
A lot of them, I mean, you might have some hobby projects where they get to a point, I suspect, where they're like, actually, this could be something. Let's do something serious with it. But then, obviously, like a lot of, certainly anyone who takes like a game to something like Kickstarter, like in order to convince anyone to hand over money, you would have to show essentially a business plan.
You would think that, wouldn't you?
You would hope.
Well, some Kickstarters, no, but the ones that are successful, you'd hope.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like with indie games, because there's so many games, just games in general, being released at a time, that a lot of people who make like little hobby projects, unless you are promoting it and you're selling it and you're doing that extra step that a lot of game developers don't think of, the bit that's not anything to do with developing and it's just making contacts and selling your game, I don't think nowadays your game just becomes successful. There's probably a couple of rare cases where it's been like super lucky and someone big has picked it up and been like, this is like the best game I've ever played ever. And it's gotten huge boosts through that and maybe made it to a full on game. But nowadays you have to do quite a bit of extra marketing and extra pushing yourself out there. Because as someone who writes about games and as someone who YouTubes a lot of games, I'm not necessarily going to find your hobby project on my own in this sea of releases every single day. It's that something is that you always need the problem, to show me.
Well, yeah. It's almost like every entertainment medium, there is an ocean of content out there.
Mm.
And finding sort of little gems and all of that is really hard. The pearls. Finding some pearls amongst that ocean. Absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't so much of an issue like in the early days of game, and by earlier days, I don't mean like Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum type. I mean even like Nintendo 64 and PlayStation, where yes, there was a lot of content.
Early.
But while there was a lot of...
Yes, we're talking about Star Wars.
While there was a lot of content out there, there wasn't like this annual kind of release of, you know, say for example, Assassin's Creed, where they, you know, aim to bring like a new game of the franchise out every year.
I suppose part of that, it was due to technology available to... Sorry, what was that, Retroid?
I'm talking to Paul Prime there. Do you remember Ocean Software? Because I remember you saying that you had a Spectrum.
Yes. I can't remember what they did, but I remember their logo and stuff.
The first big companies to start doing, you know, franchises and, you know, yearly.
Did RoboCop?
Yes, I remember that.
They would go run around licensing films and sometimes really lucky with, you know, things like RoboCop, and other times they licensed things like Navy SEALs.
When you say Navy SEALs, do you mean like actual Navy SEALs or like film Navy SEALs?
The film, it was shit. It was the shittest game. The
kingdom of how successful it was. It was a Hollywood film. Navy SEALs. I don't care if it was shit. But yeah, the only reason the film existed was because there was a game licensed, and I had never heard of the film, never seen it. Everything I've heard about it just says, yeah, it's bad, don't bother.
The film was better than the game. The game was shit.
Yeah.
I never played the game either. So no. But now Paul Prime there has opened that particular can of worms. I'm going to run with this. Jupiter.
Yes.
Oh, you that? Yeah.
It is my name, so yes.
Is it actually your name?
Yes.
I want to know, just before we go any further, have you ever had any Sailor Jupiter jokes?
Yes.
Okay, I just need to make sure that life experience has happened.
Why would you ask that?
Because it's critical to...
Also been told that I need to name my children after planets as well, because that would be full circle. I've also been told to name them after the moons of Jupiter. It's great.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
I do hope there's been no comments about the giant red spot.
Oh.
That answers that.
Awesome.
And this is our last guest for...
Now,
have you ever watched that film, How to Make Friends and Alienate People, I think it's called? Something like that.
I wrote it based on me. You're American, yes?
Yeah.
So, when did you come over here?
About 3 years ago.
Right. So, I'm not... tell me to shut up if I'm patronising. But, yeah, there we go. It hasn't happened yet. That's good. America had all the Nintendo... Well, North America had all the Atari, Nintendo. You know, those were the big companies. You know, you had Sega come in, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And it was more or less console all the way. In the UK, we never really had that until the very late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, we had a huge indie gaming scene at that time. Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, Amstrad CPC, because some Amstrad CPC.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry. But so, you know, we had all the, you know, the indie gaming scene and, you know, doing all sorts of weird shit like Hover Bother and Lawnmower Simulator and Attack of the Mutant Camels. So, you know, we've kind of had a kind of, a, you know, an indie gaming industry or sort of mentality from the off. In fact, Rare came from Ultimate Play the Game. And most of their games were released on that, was it, you know, the Rare Collection or whatever it's called? The Xbox One thing?
No.
Yes.
But yeah, so they did lots of very odd things to start off with. And then they, you know, developed into this huge behemoth when they decided to start doing Nintendo 8-bit games. And then, of course, you know, by that time they became Rare and, you know, blah, 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 and et cetera. But it's kind of interesting to see that there are certain British devs who started off in that arena and they're continuing to keep doing all that kind of thing. Like Jeff Mitchell, who started off on things like the ZX81 and the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64 and also did some ZX Spectrum games, very early 80s. He's still doing games, things like TXK on the PlayStation Vita. Mm-hmm. And Polybius on PS4 VR, which is just released now, and they're very strange. But they are indie gaming through and through. Now I know America also had the computers as well. You know, they have. You know,
yeah, America has computers.
As in, you know, like the home market, but it never seemed as big. It seemed that, you know, the consoles dominated, whereas over here it was, you know, the consoles were very expensive toys. And the home computer, you know, if I went to a friend's house after school in the 1980s, then, you know, we'd be playing something weird on a ZX Spectrum or Commodore 64. Or, you know, something like that. Whereas if, you know, if you went home after school in the US, it would probably be to play Nintendo.
Okay. So, Paul, I'm going to preface this question with, I don't think I'm nearly as old as you think I am.
I'm the old bastard, so don't worry about that.
I'm 21. So I was born in 1996.
Oh, God.
So all of these things you're saying are like my dad's age?
I'm just gonna.
Good night.
I'm just gonna drink this raspberry drink. Significantly faster now.
I mean, I can try to answer your question. So my dad had a Nintendo and NES, and I don't know. We played that, and I remember having that for ages before we had a computer. But my dad really liked it, so that's why we had it. I feel like my grandmother had a computer before we did. But honestly, I have no idea how different it was for England or anything, because I'm not really old.
Thank you very much for all that.
Metroid, I think we're going to have to give up on this 80s show.
Sorry, what was that?
Bloody hell.
Where I was going with that was that
such a big build-up.
Where, you know, the because there seemed to be a, you know, what I observed was that there was almost a surprise from some in the gaming press in the US that UK game industry, Peter Molyneux, company like Rare.
Team 17.
Criterion, they just kind of, you know, seemed to explode onto the scene on consoles at certain points, and there was almost a surprise of where did these guys come from? It's because they've been doing weird shit for most of the decade. That's where these, you know, these people came from. So
good to know.
To me, part of the, you know, the almost the reflex reaction against indie games in that, you know, oh, they're not big, they're not, you know, they're not from people who know what they're doing, you know, they're a bit weird, why aren't they more normal? Oh, they're, you know, they're uppity and they're trying to get into the industry, which I've seen from some areas when it comes to, you know, indie games. That seems to come from the, no, it only should be big business and, you know, the game companies giving an okay to a game being released. Whereas, you know, I'm kind of used to the, well, any booger can
used to the weird games that weird. Were made.
Yeah, I've decided that everything is upside down and made of cheese. Why? Because I can. You know, I can make a game and I can release it. There we go. You know, it will.
Maybe it is a generation thing. I don't know. Or just people that you're used to, or just I can see what you're saying. If you guys were used to weird games, because I've heard about some of these developers through a friend of mine, because I've played Space Giraffe, mm-hmm. and I was like, "What is this?"
That's a prime example. That's Jeff Minter.
Okay.
And TXK and Tempest 2000, and yeah.
And there are some weird games that you guys have created. That might make it. That definitely would attribute to you guys being more okay with indies. I think also England's very small, and this is my personal feeling, I guess.
About to be much smaller as well.
So England's very small. And coming from where I came from in America, I lived in upstate New York, and I knew absolutely no one who had any interest in playing indie games. Playing video games generally was very slim. And making games, it was like no one I knew at all. But moving to England, even in the remote part of England, I used to live right by Falmouth, about an hour away. There's tons of indie developers there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I know it's growing in America, but seeing that there's even indie developers in small areas in England, it seems like you guys just have more people interested in making games that are close enough to each other to inspire each other and help each other out and
That's a very good point, because even when you say, it's a long way.
Yeah.
Say I'm in Carlisle, so London is about it's almost 400 miles away. But that's a long way when it comes to this country, but of course when it comes to somewhere like the US, that's like a tiny.
I want to point out, having gone to the States last year for a little bit, that the reason everything is even though it's physically close here, but it seems to take forever to get to, it's because our transport infrastructure is, at least
that
when it comes
true.
To roads,
oh, that is true. Yes.
It's terrible in comparison to America. Obviously, we've got, to an extent, obviously, better public transport infrastructure at a town and city level. But when it comes to roads, the reason it seems to take forever to drive to anywhere is because our roads are genuinely terrible.
We only got motorways in the 50s, 60s, something like that, which I'll say for the record is before my time. Yes, I am
I'm gonna bring this back, to some stuff, because we did actually have an outline for this episode, listeners, which might shock you.
I'll just finish my drink. While I rot.
I think the thing at this point I want to ask is, so we've been talking about how things have been going for the past few years and longer, but today, Jupiter, what do you think, because what's going on with games at the moment, what's coming up, and what's been recently released, what do you think people should be playing on their systems at the moment?
I can tell you what I want to play. I really, really love Overcooked with a passion. Have any of you guys heard about the game Overcooked?
Nope.
The name is ringing a bell. I'm just going to Google it, because at my age, my memory frequently fails.
Perfect. I'm going to tell you about it, Paul. You don't need to Google it. Overcooked. I love cooking, so I really like cooking-based games. And Overcooked is a local co-op where you can play up to four people, and together you cook these dishes that take different actions to create, and you serve them at your restaurant. But it all starts out in this fantasy world where this giant meatball spaghetti monster is taking over the town, and the first level is feeding him until he's satisfied to not eat you, and your king is this giant onion, and it's this big weird world that's just so cool, and it's got so many great little aspects to it. You start off making very simple food, you make soup, but then eventually you end up making burgers, but you're making burgers on two food trucks that keep separating and coming together, and one half is where you have to cook and the other half is where you have to prep ingredients and you can fall off. And then other levels, you're making fish and chips in Antarctica, because why not? You can slide off the ice and freeze your food and everything's going wrong and terrible, but you still got to produce food, because if not, you lose. And there's bits of story thrown around as to why you're in these weird environments and why this is going on. But it's just such a well-made game. And it's coming out for the Nintendo Switch if it's not out already. Yes. It's out on Steam. It's a great game. I try to wrangle my friends into playing it far too often. But it's one of my favorite, probably games of all time at this point. I really, really enjoy it.
I'm all for four-player co-op, especially on the Switch.
So is it like Rock Band for pork chops?
What?
Rock Band for pork chops.
I don't know what you're saying, sorry. I have no idea. Yeah.
Rock Band for pork chops.
For pork chops. I don't know what Rock Band.
Well, it's just because of the multiplayer element of obviously having a band coming together.
You need four people to come to the
You need four people to be in a band. Yeah, you don't need four people. It's just a hell of a lot easier with four people. Like, you can play by yourself, but it's not a good time, in my opinion. I've tried to play by myself, and it gets impossible. Playing with two people, I'd say you both need to be skilled. I'd say three or more is better. Because eventually rats start stealing your food, and you're falling off the ice, and, you know, your chopped vegetables are burning, and the kitchen's on fire, and you just need more people.
You see, this is why we have employment law and health and safety.
Not in video games. I also really enjoy Snake Pass. That's another game that's coming out on the Nintendo Switch, and that's this beautiful snake platformer, but instead of being able to jump, you can slither up various poles and different, like, I don't know, environmental things. And just the movement in it is something I've never seen before. So it caught my eye and was really fun to play. I played it at a couple of events, and it's won some awards at events. Other than that, I'd also say play Game Jam games, because they're always really worthwhile little experiences, especially if you're someone who doesn't have a lot of time. Sitting down and playing a well-developed Game Jam game, they tend to be a lot shorter, so you can play them in your free time if you have only a little bit of it, and check out these really worthwhile small experiences. And with the number of game jams going on, there's always something cool and unique and just totally different being made. It's really quite amazing.
That's where we first played Nidhogg.
Well, we actually were at a game jam, so we were
in Plymouth.
Nidhogg is awesome.
I would like Nidhogg to come to the Switch because if we could get, obviously, sort of like the multiplayer on it going a bit more easily. Mm. Especially if we actually pick up the controls to do some stuff as well. But yeah.
Definitely.
I will just say that Overcooked is also on PS4, Xbone, and PC.
Yeah, yeah, it's everywhere. It's a great game, and everyone should play it.
And a Snake Pass is at least on PC as well, because I've just found it on PS4.
Definitely trying to take away from Nintendo there.
There's a hill pass in Derbyshire region of the Peak District called Snake Pass. There we go, trivia for you. Thanks, Google.
Perfect.
Okay, just have a interest. Is there anything for mobile that you think people might want to check out at the moment?
Mobile games. There's always tons and tons and tons of different games that are coming out in mobile at any given moment.
Yeah.
I've got a personal stake in the game Unlonely, which is coming out very soon, I would guess, based on the developer talking about it quite a bit. So this developer, this indie developer, he's worked on a different game called Lonely. And it's an iOS-based game that's super, super challenging, and it's supposed to be a metaphor on how life's challenging, but if you keep at it, it's rewarding. So he's making a game called Unlonely, where he's putting in different planets and environments that you can explore based on people that have covered and reviewed his game as a sort of thank you to all of them.
Oh, wow.
So everyone who's
only as a thank you or as some revenge?
No, as a thank you, not as revenge, because I'm in it and I'm taking it as a thank you. Thank you very much.
Hooray!
And so he's created these really beautiful worlds based on all of these different, like, little indie news outlets that have, like, supported the first game. And I'm not sure if it's going to be as challenging. I think it's supposed to be a bit more relaxing than the first game, but it just looks visually so pleasing, and it looks like such a cool, challenging, low-poly game for mobile. Starbeard is another game that I really love for mobile. It's a different type of Match 3-esque game where you're sort of dropping in different stars. And when you make matches, you create almost like warriors with long beards, and these warriors can be comboed up to do different attacks, and they can defeat little egg, dragon egg type things and little minions, and more minions start coming, and you just have to try to keep up with it. And
I think I've drunk this cider too quickly.
And in the end, you're trying to beat a dragon. Welcome to the world of indie games. Anything's possible.
Yeah, it's just, why? Because!
Yeah. And they are also taking, like, players' drawings of characters, and they're implementing, like, those characters in the game. So, like, if you're really into making cool warriors with long beards, you can submit yours, and it might just be in the game, and their renditions are really nice as well.
Frankly, who isn't?
It is really cool. I love seeing what they're doing with all their different characters. There was one more mobile game that I can think of called, I think it's something Mona Lisa. So let me just look this up real quick. But it's another game that I saw at an event, so it's not out yet. It's just called Mona Lisa. It's a speed painting stealth platformer.
Okay.
Where you play a robot made by Da Vinci, and your job is to steal famous artwork and then quickly, within a couple of seconds, replicate the artwork before putting it up and taking the original and bringing it back to your master.
Now, if it's Da Vinci, I certainly hope that you escape on his helicopter.
It's not done yet, so I'm not sure.
Someone should let them know.
Someone should tell them. Go do it. Let's go email the developer.
Helicopter. Go on, Spiral Helicopter. Go on.
Oh, thanks for those recommendations and stuff to sort of look out for, Jupiter. That's actually quite exciting. Okay, I'm going to move us on to the final segment of our show. Jupiter, I hope you've been up to something, playing something, reading or watching something, because this is the what we've been up to section.
I don't do anything. What are you?
So, Jupiter, what have you been up to lately?
My life has been drowning in Ludum Dare games currently. Not sure if everyone knows what the Ludum Dare is.
I am aware, but I suspect some of our listeners aren't. So,
I'm aware of them, but I thought it was Ludum Dare.
Okay, so quick tangent. I used to say Ludum Dare like a peasant, and I used to say it in videos.
Sad face.
And
radio sad face now.
I used to say it in videos, and all of my comments were, it's pronounced Dare. It's pronounced Dare. Just tons of I get emails about it. I used to get emails about it. It's pronounced Dare, just so you know. So I say Dare. You can say whatever you want. I just don't want to be yelled at. But the Ludum Dare, or the Ludum Dare, is the biggest online game jam. It's two parts jam and compo, so the competition's really intense. You have 48 hours. You have to create your game on your own. All your assets have to be made in that little space of time. Your source code has to be released. And then it has a jam aspect to it, which is 3 days. It's more relaxed. You can have teams. You can use pre-made assets. You don't have to submit your source code. It's just a way more relaxed experience. And every year there's a theme. Every year they do four a year, and each time there's a different theme. So the newest one has just ended. So I've been just playing through as many of those. It gets like, I don't know, 3,000 entries near around there.
Sure.
So lots of games.
What was the theme this time?
A small world, not a tiny world.
See, I love things like that because it can be anything.
Yeah.
Small world can be anything you choose it to be.
And since it's such a big jam, there's so many different varieties. I've played games that are literally just a world that you're defending, and games that are taking you inside someone's mind because the inside of someone's mind is a small world, or taking you to small planets. It's just been really awesome.
Sweet. Okay. I think I'm going to ask Paul now. Paul, what have you been up to?
Narrow it down.
My mind has gone blank.
How?
I'm not sure we've done much by what socializing is.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, you did. You were playing more Mario Kart 8 thingy on Switch with like my brother the other day.
Yeah.
So how was that going, by the way? Because there was a lot of noise when you two were playing.
Yeah, it was fun. I don't think your brother really knows the mechanics racing
noise.
Sorry, what was that? Metroid?
What kind of noise? That's what I want to know.
It was kind of like general kind of like angsting over the fact that shells and stuff had been thrown, I think.
Yeah.
That was what I was picking up on.
I think your
on.
Brother needs to practice on the shells.
But you can practice when you bring the Switch.
I know. But
you should just loan him your Switch. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I think not to be disparaging of my youngest brother, but I'm sorry, Josh, but we would not trust you at home with a Nintendo Switch.
How old is he?
He's going to be 13 next month.
Right, there we go. Nowhere near a bloody Switch.
No.
By his own.
13-year-olds are people too, you know.
With their own money. People with their own money.
Okay, well, do you want me to go through what I've been up to, Paul, instead? Because
yeah,
I remember
it's usually the same anyway.
Oh my god!
Is it Supernatural?
Oh yeah, there was some Supernatural involved.
Oh,
terrible,
no.
Terrible things for Supernatural. Okay, so the UK last week had episode. Let me think about this a second, because 12, 9. We had episode 12, 19 last week, which. Let me think about this a little more. What was that?
Was awful.
Was that Kaz?
Yeah, that okay, so stuff happened with Kaz and the whole Nephilim plotline and crazy stuff.
That one, yes.
And it's a really good episode. I quite enjoyed seeing it again.
Thanks to Dave Internet the first time.
Yeah, thanks to Dave Internet the first time. And then in the US, it was episode 12, 21. And that was a Buck Lemming episode. For listeners who have heard recent-ish episodes of this podcast, they might be aware of Lamentation in regards to the writing pair ubiquitously called as Buck Lemming. And the terribleness of what they tend to write. Episode 21 last week was terrible in terms of characterization.
I thought it was terrible.
Plotting. Kind of like pulling kind of like plot devices out of their asses and explanations to go with them. And there might have been a character death that was very poorly handled. And actually, these are the same writers that were responsible for killing a very popular character back in season 10, played by Felicia Day, which was Charlie Bradbury.
Spoiler.
They're still not forgiven.
It's 2 years ago.
It's still too soon.
It's still too soon, yeah. And then they've just gone and killed another female character, another minority female character. I'm not saying who, but fans of the show might be able to guess from that. To be fair, it was kind of hard to, like, evade news of what had happened because the fandom reaction to this episode last week was kind of like Fire Buck Lemming did trend on Twitter for a while. Tumblr was rife. Reddit wasn't looking too happy either, at least in a couple of subs that I visit. So yeah, it was just kind of like nobody was happy about what had happened. But don't worry, it's a 2-episode finale in the States this week. So, you know, over the course of, 2 hours with breaks, you know, who knows what can happen. But thankfully, Buck Lemming to them, because I can never remember what they're... One's called Eugene, the other one's called Ross, I think.
I think their first names are Those Bastards.
That too. but yeah, they're not responsible for the finale episodes. So people can sort of rest easy, but probably not because of how the season's built up so far.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's my weekly Supernatural report. I've also been watching American Gods because a new episode came out this week.
Yeah.
And it had a very intense love scene in it between two gentlemen.
I was sleeping.
Pardon?
I had a nap.
You were sleeping, yeah, you missed the love scene. It was actually really well done, and it is based on something that happens in the book. I'd say I actually did it a bit better than the book, actually.
Ooh.
How they played with it. It was another enjoyable episode. I just don't want to spoil it because there are obviously people out there who haven't read the book.
I have read the book, but it was years ago because I'm so old.
Same, but I read it when I just finished college, aka high school in this instance, for clarity for Jupiter, technically.
For a series like that, I'm getting the impression that I should definitely wait until it's got a lot of episodes.
What's that? Sorry, Retroid?
I should definitely wait until there's a lot of episodes of that.
I'm enjoying sort of catching up with it on a weekly basis. We've also now got on to season...
Weekly is too long.
I like binge-watching my things.
Yes, it's just I want all the things so I can just gorge.
We also got on to season 2 of Lucifer, and we're a couple of episodes in.
Yay.
Really enjoyed that. We'll probably be caught up probably by like the end of the week. So we'll be on the sort of weekly release schedule for that.
When's the third season coming?
It's
later this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
What else did we watch? We watched Doctor Who.
Yay!
But it was a really creepy episode.
Yeah.
It's been my favourite of the season so far.
It was good, and it felt like it was a warning against Tory Britain. But maybe that's just me.
Might be reading into things.
Everything is a warning against Tory Britain.
Yeah. So I was going to say that it's closest that they've come to something like the Borg, but not necessarily.
I know. I also felt like it was kind of like an extreme version.
Excuse me if I may nerd into the conversation here. The original Cybermen, Tomb of the Cybermen, which was a Patrick Troughton story, is the closest that Doctor Who has got to the Borg.
But did they have organic components?
Yes, Cybermen.
Because they're half men, half cyber.
Yes, they're men who are cyber and not cyber.
Do I remember Classic Who? No, I don't.
Do you remember what a cyber makes a Cyberman a Cyberman?
But you will do. You will remember what these Cybermen are like because they're returning.
Okay.
Yes, they're bringing them back and not the shit versions that they...
Oh, that's good to know.
The alternate universe. Yes, let's have them because of Bluetooth earphone thing.
Also, I didn't play any games this weekend. However, I did actually update the firmware on both my Vita and 3DS so that I could game in the near future because I hadn't turned them on in a while.
That's really cutting it there for things I have been doing.
But the joy with the Vita was that I'd forgotten my Sony account password and had to reset it. However, I also have two-factor authentication on. So it was the complicated process of resetting the password and then thinking I'd got it. And then it was like, oh, but the PS Vita needs me to generate a device-specific password. And so I then had to, even though I was already logged in on the Sony PlayStation site, I had to then go to a slightly separate sub-site to log in to a site to create a device-specific password. There was a lot of logging in, which felt a little bit unnecessary. Like, I was already in the account, why couldn't I do it from there kind of thing? But I eventually managed to log my account back in on my Vita and update it and stuff. Took a bit of doing. I got there, because then I was like, oh, PlayStation Plus games for the month. Oh, you know, like I should check that on my PlayStation 4 today. Oh, wait, So I had to log in again, and then I had to go and stand somewhere with some phone signal so I could get my two-factor code texted to me.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't sound fun at all.
No, it sounds like hell.
Of course, I can't really bring myself to quite trust Sony's ability to look after my account details, you know.
Oh, God, when have they ever had trouble?
I don't know.
When has anyone ever had trouble with account details?
And being stolen?
I think Nintendo haven't, but that's because they're largely useless when it comes to the internet.
So,
not that I have any opinion on that.
Not that you have any opinion on that, no. And I also find... I just remember something I just did. I decided to get through 3 weeks' worth of ironing on Saturday, and I binge-watched about the last sort of 5 or 6 episodes of Riverdale Season 1.
Oh,
and I'm still kind of annoyed of what they did with Jughead. However, I didn't quite see where the plot was going, which was nice, so I was actually surprised when things happened. I'm not spoiling it because, like, this thing only, I mean, the season only finished last week. So, yes, Riverdale was interesting, but I am still disappointed with them over what they did with Jughead and Maggie.
So the finale?
Yeah, the finale happened last week. So the whole season one's up on Netflix now in the UK.
Oh, I was looking forward to this week's episode. Bollocks.
Yeah, it's done for the season. I haven't heard. I may
watch that, but I've got a real thing against it because it's based on Archie, which I could never give a toss about.
It's really different to the original Archie comics. It's nothing like its names and setting and hair colours, and that's about it. Like, it has almost no resemblance.
My sole memory, really, of Archie, other than that there are two lasses in here called Betty and Veronica, and they got their own
series,
was a front cover where Archie is carrying either Betty or Veronica, I don't care, away on a beach and said, "I had to beat off three men to rescue you." It's gone dark. I thought this was a family comic.
Okay, Cookie, what have you been up to?
Not much, to be fair. Watched Riverdale, enjoyed that. Doctor Who, favourite episode of the season. But talking about age, because it's been brought up quite a bit, I've actually started watching a new TV show called Better Late Than Never. And it's got William Shatner in it.
I'm just going to silently take offence at everything now.
I don't see how. I'm bloody the same age as you, you cheeky bastard.
Yeah, you don't act very old. He acts very old.
Oh, could she come back to this podcast again?
Replacing him, he's old.
Who's the president? Oh, never mind.
It's got William Shatner in it.
Was that a dig in America?
Yeah.
Who's your president? You're unelected leader. Let me correct myself.
Thank you.
Our president is evil. So it's okay.
President,
I don't
evil.
Understand why England takes digs at America's president. You're one bad too.
We're kind of sharing the pain. It's sort of like an empathy. It's like, well, we apparently are both full of idiots, aren't we?
We are.
Bunch of hell.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Not a problem at all. But yeah, it's got William Shatner, George Foreman, some quarterback who's quite funny, and Henry Winkler in it. And basically, they've all gone off to Asia to travel around Asia doing like a documentary show. But they're too busy winding up each other and taking the piss out of each other. And it is quite amusing.
A little bit like Three Men in a Boat.
They actually, the first night, they get there and the guy who's in charge of booking the hotels has booked them in the Cubicle Hotel in Tokyo. So you've got these...
Oh my God, but they're so... oh my God, Shatner! I mean, surely they would struggle to climb into those.
You get to watch them struggling to climb up, and then a Japanese businessman runs in to his cubicle after just coming out of the shower, and their faces was just a picture. So yeah, but it's quite bizarre, very crazy, and a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be. So that was good. I have also, Don't Kill Me, Retroid.
Too late.
4 weeks ago, I managed to pick up Call of Duty Advanced Warfare very, very cheap for when my son comes up to play.
Yeah.
So I actually booted up the PlayStation 4 yesterday and thought, I'll just give this a whirl for 5 minutes, see what it's like, get some practice in before Callum comes and kicks my ass at it, because I'm pretty shit compared to him.
5 minutes,
Is this 5 minute real world time or 5 minute playing the game time?
It was going to be 5 minutes, and then it was 9:30 at night, and I'd realised I'd been up there for since 2 o'clock.
5 hours.
Yeah. So that wasn't too bad.
Only out by a factor of 60.
Yeah. Well, you know. Well, at our age, Retroid, time doesn't matter.
Yes.
And that has basically been that this week.
Okay.
To be fair.
So, Retroid, what have you been doing?
What? Killing your people in the lawn.
Well, yeah, that's a constant. I mean, it takes a part of my day.
That's it.
Well, last year I bought a 21-inch CRT TV with the intention of fitting it in my arcade cabinet, which I got second-hand. Would not fit. So... vest. Put it in my loft until now when the arse end of last week I decided, right, I'm going to do something about this. So fetched it down from the loft, managed not to die. This is good.
Didn't break your back or keel over?
Well, it's a big bastard heavy TV.
I'm sure it is.
It's a very rickety ladder. So that was a very real risk. So,
I'm sure you didn't have a lot of energy. It's fine.
I had to sit down and rest my leg. Enjoy your work, original, and continue. So, I got it downstairs and then, I took the back off because the idea was that it wouldn't fit in my arcade cabinet because the speakers on the side, because it's in a standard CRT TV, speaker grills on the side, so it would not fit. And I thought, well, if I just cut those off, it will fit. So I took it apart and I checked, and yes, the speakers were just on wires. They were just mounted on the back of these, plastic, sticking out sections.
Mm-hmm.
So took a hacksaw to it and cut these sides off after disconnecting the speakers. Managed to get to do all that. So, sawed them off. Tested the TV, still worked. Didn't kill myself with electricity. Always a bonus. Managed to fit it inside my arcade cabinet. I put the glass panel on, and it was an absolutely perfect fit. So, very pleased with that. Hooked up my Commodore 64, because I am old.
Of course you did.
Yeah, of course. And, played a few things on that because I've just recently bought the a little SD card adapter which works as a disk drive for it. So, basically every game I care about is on an SD card with about 4 gig free on it. So I did that. And then another little project which I've got, which is hacking apart a ZX Spectrum and trying to get it to run on 5-volt phone charger instead of... I'm not going to go into the detail, but it's a pain in the ass because it has to be a 9-volt charger. It's non-standard according to all the ones you can buy now.
It's old.
Because it's old. and Sinclair, which is fantastic. And they did things in a really weird way. But, took it apart.
They weren't sure how to do it correctly because they didn't have that experience or time. Yeah, old things.
Yeah. It's just, a little bit of trivia there. Their first ZX Spectrum computers that they sent out, some of those are still running, which is a fucking miracle, frankly. But some people, refurbish them and resell them professionally on, places like eBay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and there was one bloke who sells these, and he got one of them returned, and an angry email from, the buyer, saying, this is obviously a bot. This is a mess inside. I opened it up. What the hell? There's wires all over the place. And he had to send an email back saying, no, it's an early one. Those are all original. It was broken and a mess when it was released, and those are all the repairs.
His defense was that it was broken when it was released, so you're not getting a fucking refund.
The original issue ones that wow. Spectrums were notoriously broken. And they had to have all kinds of wires soldered and, you know, bypassing bits that didn't work and were broken and, you know, blah, blah, blah. The Rubber Keyed Spectrum was only on sale for about 18 months and it had 5 revisions. Because the first one was like a fire risk. They were hobbyists, so all power to them. They were making a computer and they were, you know, flogging it very cheaply. But you could tell that something was. But yeah, this is a later one that, you know, I've got. It's a Spectrum 128 and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Trying to get it to run on, you know, a more standard voltage by bypassing bits of it, and I managed. And I also managed to get an RGB picture onto the TV in my arcade cabinet, which, was a pain in the ass to do, but I managed it while, you know, reading all kinds of documentation on how the SCART standard worked and RGB video and jammer cabinets.
The print is very small.
Yes, I had to wear my reading glasses, my little bifocals.
I'm sure you did.
But I managed that, and that's just because it opens up a few possibilities, including it's got me interested again in the jammer cap. Does anyone know what I mean by jammer cap?
No.
Yeah.
Nope. It's the Japanese Arcade Manufacturers Something Association. The idea was that when arcade games first came out, they all had their own custom wiring. And if you bought a cabinet from one manufacturer and then an arcade board PCB with the game on, there was absolutely no guarantee that they would plug in and work. Because, you know, they'd have different pinouts and, you know, the power would be one place and where another board would have the video, you know, all that kind of thing. And, you know, you would probably kill both the cabinet and the board if you plugged it into the wrong one. So in the early 80s, the jammer organization came along and said, if we standardize this pinout, so it's always this pinout, and then we have 3 buttons, and if you plug in any arcade game into this, you know, into a standard jammer harness, which, as they call it, then it will, you know, automatically power the board. You'll get the best video possible on the screen. The sound will work. The controls will work. The coin slot will work. Everything like that will just, it will be automatic. It will, you know, it's a standard. So, years ago, I went to an arcade, Seaside Arcade in Silloth, and they were selling some of their arcade cabinets off for £50.
Good, yeah.
I just wanted rid. And me being, a fan of arcade games and such, it was, I'll have it. How am I going to get home? Best phone the father-in-law. and I'll die on the way home, because literally, I am not fitting anyone with this. By the time we got the arcade cabinet in the car and pulled it down the seats, I was pressed up comedy style against the front window in the front seat.
So how long was the car ride?
Maybe only about 45 minutes, something like that. But
worth it.
If it had a sudden stop, it would have been death by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle cabinet.
Awesome.
It's like, yeah, that was fun.
It wasn't.
But yeah, blah blah. The monitor in that was shot because it had been, you know, used constantly for, you know, like about 20 years or something like that. So this is me replacing the arcade monitor in it with a standard TV, and I now know how to wire it so I can plug in my own. I do have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2-player arcade.
Yay!
Cool.
So I can, you know, once I've finished wiring things, because I'm waiting for some boards to arrive so I can, you know, interface it properly rather than just hot gluing things and soldering.
Yeah, I Simpsons board as well.
That's going to be harder because it's quite expensive. But I would love the Simpsons arcade game, the Konami one.
Yes,
that was a classic. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. Otherwise, I've been steaming through Sense 8 on Netflix.
Hmm.
Anyone else watching that?
Start season 2 after watching the
2-hour
top Christmas special, as they called it.
Yeah.
I kind of got distracted by Lucifer, so.
Which is fair enough, because Lucifer is a good series.
Mm.
But I've been quite enjoying Sense8. It is refreshingly weird in the way it's doing things.
Oh, definitely.
I like it, especially like the way that you can tell it cost a fortune to film, because just simply the way they've got all the location shooting, and they can just randomly have the different characters, pop up in those locations.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's have the German guy appear in India and then in Kenya. And then not in Iceland in this series, but various other places like that. And it's just, yeah, this looks expensive. And it's a refreshingly strange TV, and it's from one of my favorite writers, which is John Michael Straczynski, who wrote Babylon 5. So, and of course the Wachowskis. So it's got a good pedigree, and I've been enjoying that. Other than that, dipping into the occasional light-hearted comedy entertainment of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
Or the UK and America, as it will be in maybe 5-10 years' time. Give or take.
If they release all of it in one go, or is it episode a week?
It's trickling out an episode a week now. Okay. They had the first few episodes up. So I'm trying to wait until there's more episodes. Although, frankly, after watching the end of episode 3, I'm really not sure if I can binge watch the series. without, say, a bottle of gin or something in each hand.
Yeah, that reminds me of when I binge watched season 3 of Black Mirror.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was just Black like Black a, Mirror, you know, it's like a night, and it's like I need something lighter.
Yeah. Like the World at War box set or something like that. Sense8, very good. Getting towards the end of the season now. Handmaid's Tale, going to be waiting until there are more episodes so I can we can binge one. Yeah. Lucifer, that's one of the few series that I'm not waiting for there to be several episodes. I'm just, if I see there's an episode of Lucifer, I will watch it.
I mean, I think some series do still suit that kind of episodic nature.
Yeah.
But
yeah, but when you've got a heavy narrative that's running through them.
Yeah.
Things like Black Mirror is ideal.
Yeah.
Because you can either watch them out of order, you can binge watch them, or you can watch one and then leave it for a few months and go back and see another one.
I mean,
because they're all self-contained. But yeah, they're heavy narrative series. I demand that they're released.
All at once.
I demand it.
Yes. This is my decree.
I mean, I've got the feeling that Star Trek Discovery, if it's going to be like traditional Star Trek in its very episodic nature, that will be one that you can kind of watch, in bits.
But with that, I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping that they have more of a story arc with that. Mind you, Deep Space Nine managed it.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and Voyager was shit, so who cares?
I think Enterprise was kind of interesting in that respect, because, season 3 of Enterprise had fight against the Zindi and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was kind of episodic, but also kind of...
Episodic, arc. But part of an arc, and they still had some decent episodes there. I think Enterprise gets a bit unfairly... treated.
Oh, definitely.
It's not my favourite Trek, but it's better than Voyager. I don't like Voyager.
Season 4 was weird because it was basically kind of stuck in parts and kind of tried to fill in the plot holes.
Yeah, I think at that point they knew they were on...
It was the Rogue One of the Star Trek universe, almost.
It was a little bit, yeah. Except I liked Rogue One more.
Rogue One's the only Star Wars thing I've seen.
Really?
Yeah, I just play indie games. I don't. That's it.
Did you like it though?
I didn't like the girl. I felt that she had no dimension.
Mm.
And that was right.
She was a little flat.
Yeah, she's a very flat character. Oh, I don't think I liked the part where the guy supposedly couldn't walk, and then all of a sudden he somehow made it up inside the building, even though there was like a door that kept opening and closing, and she barely made it through. But for whatever reason, guy who can't walk somehow got through it. I thought that was a bit unbelievable.
In its defense, I think that was one of the bits I got refilmed.
Well,
probably because they thought the ending was too bleak, and said the ending was fairly bleak.
Ending was bleak.
Yeah, but I think it was more bleak. I think you're like.
Oh, my husband has corrected me. I've seen 2 Star Wars films. What was the other one?
It was 7, and Rogue One was the last one we saw.
7, he said. Very, very good, like, I don't know, like, concerned?
No.
Confidently? Yeah, I don't remember that. Then. Apparently I've seen that one, but I probably didn't pay attention.
Angsty teenager smashing things up with his lightsaber dressed in black.
I mean, probably, yeah. Sounds like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teenage Kylo Ren. I don't care if he's a teenager or not. He's a teenager.
Oh, dear.
You see, conveniently, we have a Star Wars podcast that we did a while back.
Mm.
That, so you can watch them in the correct order and skip some of them because they're shit.
I can just not watch any of them. That's fine.
Yeah, but I'm also plugging us, you see.
Ah, so yeah, I'll go back and listen to those and watch Star Wars.
Oh my god. To be fair, the order suggested in that episode does make it a little less painful, but
Yeah, for God's sake, don't watch them starting with 1.
But that's the logical start.
Yeah, it is the logical number, but it's don't.
Okay.
Because I feel if you've managed to.
Well, I think I'm going to start with Rogue One because that's the first one I've seen, but okay.
Well, actually, Rogue One is a very good starting point because you could watch Rogue One and then you could watch A New Hope, which is, you know, the first of the original trilogy. So there you go. And that leads on directly from the end of Rogue One.
I guess I might actually have to watch Star Wars.
All right. Well, I think if Retroid's finished talking about what you've been up to.
I was just going to ask Jupiter if you've heard of Pico 8.
Oh yeah, of course I've heard of the Pico 8 engine.
Hooray! Yeah, that is one of the grievous things I've played about with earlier. I've not coded anything with it because it's been, yeah. I came to the conclusion several years ago that I'm far better with the soldering iron and the electronic side than I am with the typing.
Wow, I like the typing sound effects. That was great.
So I'm perfectly happy with people to piss about with the coding aspect, and I'll try and I'll try and make things that I can play Pico 8 on as small as possible.
So I've got 2 comments to that. If you don't like coding, maybe you should try Bitsy. Bitsy is an engine sort of similar to Pico 8 in the sense that it's tiny games that are sort of pixel art, but there's actually no coding. You just draw it in, and you can. It's really, really simple to use. It's very, very minimal coding at most. It's supposed to be for beginners. But aside from that...
Which is awesome that someone's done that.
Yeah, it's really nice. And the guy who's developing it is such a great person. You can just bug him on Twitter and go, I don't understand things. And he, like, walks you through it. I don't know where he finds the time, but he does.
So, excuse me, what this? Who do?
But there's this guy called Robin B on Twitter, and he makes physical games for game jams. Like, with the soldering iron and stuff.
Oh, no, that's cool.
Yeah, he makes all these cool little light-based games. Some of them are light-based. The ones I've seen him physically make are light-based. But recently at Train Jam, which is a physical location game jam that happens on a train, he created this. Oh, yeah. It's like a see-through board that you wear gloves on, and you can feel around, and it gives you, like, a vibration or something. I haven't played it. But my understanding is it gives you a vibration or something that tells you where these invisible cats are. So you're trying to pet invisible cats in this world.
Oh, that is instantly the best game I've ever made.
Yeah, well, exactly. And he's a really awesome and a great guy. And he does talks about what he brings in his tool bag and stuff to these events because he is making quite unique stuff. He made another game that I have played called Knife to Meet You where you have to push these buttons while a knife swings at your fingers. Trying to stop you, and you have to hold down, I think, all like 3 buttons, it might be, or 4 buttons, and you can play multiplayer, but the knife won't just go all the way across. It'll like stop sometimes and go backwards or fake you out, and if you're letting go, you're like losing points almost.
Tricksy knife.
Cool. Wow.
So physical games do have their place in game jams.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. It's kind of stalled at the moment because I got distracted by something shiny. But from like AliExpress, you can buy 128 by 128 pixel LCDs.
Mm.
And it's something like 1.4 inch across. Well, you know, at corner to corner. And my idea is to make a little Pico 8 handheld. Tiny little Pico 8 handheld.
Have you seen the Pico 8 handheld device, the pocket chip?
I've seen that. That's a hell of a lot bigger than I was thinking. With my tired, old, ancient, blurry eyes.
All right, okay. I think that is really all we have got time for this week.
We should let Grandpa Retroid get some sleep.
Yeah, we really should.
That's it.
So it is good night from
Jupiter Hadley on Twitter, where you can find me. That's me.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Hey, it's good night for me, Paul, a.k.a. Cookie. You can find me on Twitter as @_Cookie.
It's good night for me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night for me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EK6891. You can find, as we've said before, notes for this episode over at nerdassemble.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter @NerdsPodcast. Plus, we're also on Facebook as Nerdassemble Podcast. This episode is also available on iTunes and Stitcher, or at least it is when it's one of the latest 20 episodes to have been released. So, you know.
When it works.
When it works. To be fair, it's because of how our RSS is set up. So, yeah.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
Kettle full of badgers.
Yeah.